Hi and welcome. My name is Karen Giesecker, and at the time when this presentation was put together, I was the managing director for influenza surveillance at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. I'm an infectious disease epidemiologist by training. My other co-authors, Kathy White, is the school health nurse consultant at the Maternal Child Health Unit Prevention Services Division at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Kathy Patrick is the state school nurse consultant at the Colorado Department of Education. Tracy Woodall was the coordinator for the school-based influenza-like illness absenteeism surveillance at the state health department. And Margaret Huffman is a clinical outreach manager at the immunization section at the state health department. And our title is Multi-Level Collaboration H1N1 Impact on School Absenteeism and School Health Services. Three main objectives, really describing the components of our logic model, and I'm not sure if they got set out in the back, which is in the back as a handout. Oh, great, thank you very much. Demonstrating the effectiveness of this multi-level collaboration and discussing some of the lessons learned from our multi-level collaboration designed to decrease the impact of H1N1 in our schools and our school communities. So a little background. The state of Colorado realized that the 2009 H1N1 influenza season was going to be an opportunity for improved multi-level public health collaboration between the state health department, our local public health departments, state education, schools, including the school administrators and school nurses. We have people that interact on a yearly basis between all these groups, but what was unique about this year was that there was a formal request for collaboration between the chief medical officer, Dr. Ned Kalange, and the assistant commissioner of education, Robert Hammond. And so a lot more happened between the collaboration between schools, local public health, and state public health, along with a lot of other partners. And so the team and I are going to present to you a little bit about what happened over the last year. Kathy?
Good morning. So as Karen said, as 2009 rolled around in the spring, we identified H1N1. And by August, we realized it could have a great impact, not only on our state, but specifically on our schools. And in Colorado, we are proudly, I think, known, I guess, as a local control state. And what that means is both our local public health agencies and our local schools, at the district and sometimes at the school building level, they determine how things are run. So in designing this collaborative, we wanted to make sure that we had the clearest and consistent information that would go out to our schools and out to our communities and the accurate information. So you'll see that the handout that we passed out, the logic model, is a little more detailed than what I have up here on the screen. But this really shows you the design of our collaborative. And as you can see, we're still collaborating because here we are today. So we looked at the personnel that would be necessary, and of course, at the money that we would need. And we had some sources of funding, both from our federal government through our emergency preparedness program, and also through the CDC funding for H1N1 and through our immunization program. The processes we thought were most important would, one, be surveillance, both surveillance throughout the H1N1 season, and also surveillance in looking at specifically school closures, because we saw early in the spring that was a big problem, with one case being identified and schools closing down, and we hope to be able to minimize that. Communication, we felt, was one of our most important processes in having consistent and correct communication going out to our citizens and specifically to our schools. And then the intervention and prevention program would be the most important information that we would want to get out. Our outputs, we had weekly school influenza absenteeism surveillance programs. In other words, the schools reported to their local public health agencies the number of absenteeism. And this is the first time ever that schools really collected, and I see nods, of absenteeism related to illness. So this was very important. And then the students following respiratory hygiene measures. In other words, was our information that we were communicating effective? And then our outcomes were increased multi-level communications, and you'll see in just a minute what those are. And We hoped, and then we saw, increased H1N1 vaccine administration, and then we hoped that parents would keep their sick kids home and that schools would be able to maintain a level so they wouldn't have to close. So this is what our collaborative process looked like. These were the individuals that came together. We met on a weekly, sometimes bi-weekly schedule. We had, I represent the Prevention Services Division at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. We had our immunization program at the table. We had early childhood at the table. So they sent out the consistent communication to our child care centers. We had the Colorado Department of Education at the table and met with our deputy commissioners at least once and had a flow of communication there. Disease control and environmental EPI program was at the table, and they provided the surveillance system. Our consumer protection program, which actually monitors the rules and regulations for school health. Our emergency preparedness were great partners because they had the money. Local public health was involved. We had weekly conference calls with local public health, and school and public health nurses were all engaged in this process. Our laboratories were there as well. So I'm going to turn this over now to Tracy, who will tell you a little more about the surveillance program.
So the Colorado Department of Public Health uses many surveillance methods to assess influenza burden throughout the state, and monitoring the influenza-associated hospitalizations is an effective way because this is a reportable condition. So this is a histogram, and it's the reported influenza-like illness, or ILI, associated hospitalizations by week of diagnosis in Colorado during the 2009-10 pandemic flu season. So you see the horizontal axis is the week ending date, and the vertical axis is the number of hospitalizations. The red cases are actually confirmed 2009 H1N1 cases, and the yellow cases are not confirmed. Those are the rapid flu positive cases, but really we know that during that time period, 99% of all the flu that was circulating was H1N1. So the peak number of reported hospitalized influenza cases occurred during the week ending October 17th, right at the very top there. And this was over 350 cases all in 1 week.
Let's see. Oh, you use the mouse. Click left.
Oh, okay.
Click left.
Okay, so this is our school surveillance. And the purpose of the Colorado School ILI Absenteeism Surveillance Project was to monitor ILI in Colorado schools during the 2009-10 pandemic influenza season. So local public health agencies worked with school districts, administrators, office staff, and school nurses to collect data on absenteeism, on the rate of student absenteeism in the schools due to influenza-like illness. And 29 local public health agencies participated, reporting the absenteeism rates weekly to the Colorado Department of Public Health. This covered about two-thirds of the Colorado counties. So this is the percent of selected schools reporting over 5% absenteeism due to ILI by week. The horizontal axis is the school week ending date and the number of schools reporting. And the vertical axis is the percent of schools with over 5% ILI. So the week ending October 9th is where the school ILI absenteeism peaked in the state of Colorado. We had about 853 schools reporting at the time, which is about 48% of all the schools in the state reporting. So the week ending October 9th, 23% or nearly 200 schools reported over 5% ILI absenteeism. And local public health was also, and schools were analyzing their own ILI absenteeism data. This is from Jefferson County, dated October 12th. And they did a really great job showing geographically the rate of ILI absenteeism per 100 students during the peak. So this is the rate of influenza-like illness per total enrollment per 100 students. And again, Jefferson County did this. So the largest dot there on the bottom dictates over 20% ILI absenteeism. And then as the absenteeism decreases, the dots get smaller. So this just shows the different surveillance types that were in effect to monitor the influenza burden during the 2009 H1N1 flu season. And Margaret?
We're kind of this panel within a panel. It's kind of fun. So this is just noting how we built on and expanded our pre-existing collaborative relationships between public health, schools, communities, beginning actually in spring of 2009 when H1N1 first emerged. And we would have daily phone calls. They were somewhat emergent in nature at that point. We quickly were able to bring those together in a more formalized method as the response became a little bit more formal and as we just were able to get some more structure around how we were responding. So we actually culminated in a weekly statewide conference call with our partners, and that involved reporting back on surveillance, communications, as well as vaccine availability, which at the time when we started those communication calls, we didn't have the vaccine. So we also had the Colorado Flu Report, which indicates the CDPHE surveillance information. This was available and updated weekly for our school partners and the public, and regarding H1N1, as you can see here. And then in addition, our emergency response funding helped support what we call CoHelp, the Colorado Helpline. This was a toll-free call-in helpline that was manned all day, every day. CoHelp relayed information provided by the immunization section and our disease control partners regarding influenza and vaccines. We had scripts ready for them regarding symptoms, what you could do for help if you were ill with H1N1, should you stay home, should you receive further help. It was all really an excellent resource for us. And the upper green line there to the right of where the red peaks, that indicates some peaks in the call volume to CoHelp. So where we saw the most disease was in October before our vaccine was widely available. But then in mid-November, you're receiving a lot of national news about H1N1 involving pediatric deaths. And so there was an increased interest then at that point that was resulting in calls to CoHelp. And then again, once our vaccine became more widely available in early December, again, there was more calls into CoHelp. So that enabled us to provide, it challenged us with how do we communicate all these complex messages. Before the vaccine was widely available, how to communicate the healthy hygiene habits, especially to school-age children. And that involved all of the partners that we have mentioned so far, as well as then once vaccine did become available, it was allocated to us in such a formulation that we had to prioritize at a local level in different ways. And so we had a lot of communication efforts that went into like the Get Vaccinated poster that you see here that indicated who should be first priority, second priority, third priority. And we would change that exclamation point as the vaccine became more available, and we were able to provide that in a more widely allocated method. So I'm going to turn this over to Kathy Patrick.
Thank you. I'm the state school nurse consultant, and so I work out of the Department of Education, and I work with all the school nurses in the state. In last spring, I conduct regional workshops with all the nurses, and rural and urban school districts were represented, and we had over 500 school nurses attending. Now, we found this opportunity great to provide them with an overview of influenza by Dr. Giesecker. She showed them the local trends of the flu in the state and school absenteeism, and was able to actually show them down to their community what the incidence of flu was in their area. In May, before school let out, a survey was done to the school nurses, kind of an after action report, and represented here are some of the interesting results. The representation between urban and rural were almost half. Half urban, half rural. And as our first presenter mentioned, in terms of the aging of our workforce, over 60% of the nurses were over 50 years of age. We had all sorts of schools, elementary, middle, and high school, and also included some of the preschool nurses. One interesting aspect of this survey was that 25% or over 25% of the nurses reported being ill with fever, cough, and sore throat, which were the hallmark symptoms of ILI. And none of them reported being absent from this illness. So that was a little concerning because, we should be practicing what we preach when we talk about influenza, because we were saying if you're sick, you need to stay home. The nurses played a huge role in their schools. Over 95% provided education and prevention information. They were the go-to person for that. They provided support to staff. They triaged ill students, helped with vaccine clinics in the schools, and they felt that the school surveillance was of value. And where did nurses get their information? Well, we were very fortunate here in the state. I administer a listserv, a school nurse listserv. We have over 600 members, and so this was a great way to get information out to nurses. And as you can see, over 90% found that that's where they got their information about H1N1 and what was happening in the state. Also, the local public health sent out emails. We had a website at the Department of Education that linked to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment website on their flu reports. So information was readily available to all the school nurses. And I think Dr. Yeager will wrap up.
So with the lessons learned, the fact that there were so many of us and it's a collaborative effort, it was really important that we had everybody at the table. Two or three times a week we would all get together. There were different meetings for different groups, but the fact that we were communicating and could share the same message, hopefully, I think became very important for us. The school ILI absenteeism surveillance system that Tracy helped put together and then manage was challenging and yet incredibly valuable. The challenge part was that trying to get everybody to use the same definition and calculate that ILI rate the same way was challenging. So we had to do some training on what the numerator and the denominator was to be. But once we had that up and running, and once we were getting that information out weekly through the Colorado Flu Report and then with the regional workshops, the school nurses realized how valuable that data was for them, as well as our local public health partners. And interestingly, the media was tracking this as well. So having that information helped with the parents, with the school administrators, and it's something that, even though there's not extra funding for this year for that, because it was funding that was emergency funding last year, several of the communities and schools are doing it continually, and not just for influenza-like illness, but also for gastrointestinal illnesses. The school nurse workshops were well attended. We had over 500 nurses at the different workshops that were all over the state, and I was very fortunate to travel with the group. And what we found was that being able to communicate both the science, the biology of influenza, talking about the different surveillance systems that we had going on in the state, where they could get the information, the fact that it was going out to the listserv, that we had it on the state health department website, their own community data, that was really valuable. And I think being able to be in communication is huge. The after action report really shows us what worked, some of the gaps we had. I think what Kathy showed us where the nurses didn't stay at home, they felt that their role was very important and that they needed to be at school. And I think some of the challenges and workforce issues that we saw are important to take to higher administrators and to policy workers about how do we keep our schools going and the importance of our school nurses. With that, some of the recommendations to continue to promote intra and interagency communication and collaboration. The graphic on the right here really looks at the importance of all these different providers and agencies talking about the same kind of communication messages, which is the second point here, providing coordinated, clear, concise, and accurate information and communication from all levels. One of the things that the school nurses said in their survey was that they got a lot of information. When it wasn't coordinated, it made them very confused and it made them a little crazy. And so the better that we did our job collaborating, the easier it was for that message to get out through the nurses to the students, to the families, and to the community. Finally, what I realized, and I think all of us, is that H1N1 really provided the school nurses with a way to, shout out, and they're a huge resource. And I don't think that public health professionals in the big stand really utilize our school nurses at the level that we could. And even within the schools, the school administrators got to see the value of the school nurses this time. And so, you know, they're invaluable. They're often a hidden asset that really can provide knowledge not only to our school children, but to the parents, the school communities, which really are communities. And I think that hopefully this past year and the collaboration that was built at a whole nother level, the relationships that were built can be a stepping stone for continued collaboration around disease. It's not just influenza that's hitting our schools, obviously, and there's so many different things that we can be a collaboration between state health department, local public health, Department of Education, and I think that our school nurses are really the key in that. So thank you very much. We have nothing to disclose. That, I think, is the next slide. Tons of acknowledgments. Clearly, there's a collaboration. There's five of us here, but there's an enormous number of individuals that were part of pulling all of this off. The Colorado Department of Public Health and local public health, the Colorado Department of Education, school administrators, school nurses, and then the parents and the family, the media, the lab, all those different groups. If you want any more information, please follow up with Kathy White at the State Health Department. Thank you.
Okay, this morning we've had some excellent examples of how agencies have used the community-based participatory action research process to guide program planning and development and ultimately make huge improvements on community and population health. We've also seen from Dr. Cadet's example how policy can sometimes have very adverse effects on community and population health. So just another round of applause for our panel, please. Thank you all.